AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
AP News, I'm Tim McGuire. President Biden extends the moratorium on student loan payments until the legal action against his plan to forgive a portion of people's loans is settled.
The Secretary of Education is extending the pause on student loan payments while we seek relief from the courts, but no later than June 30, 2023, which would give the Supreme Court an opportunity to hear the case in its current term.
The High Court clears the way for the handover of former President Donald Trump's tax returns to the House Ways and Means Committee following a three-year legal fight. The court, with no noted dissent, rejected Trump's plea for an order to block the Treasury Department from turning over 6 years of tax returns from him and his companies. Then there's the fight over Trump's effort to slow the FBI investigation of his holding of classified information at his Florida resort after he left the White House. Lisa Dwyer explains.
A federal appeals court appears deeply skeptical that former President Donald Trump was entitled to a review by an independent arbiter of documents seized in an FBI search of his Florida estate. The three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit, including two Trump appointees, repeatedly suggested that Trump was seeking special treatment. The judges indicated through their questioning that they were likely to side with the Justice Department, which has sought an immediate end to a special master review process that it says has unnecessarily delayed its investigation into the presence of classified documents at Mar-a-Lago. It was not immediately clear when the court might rule.
The Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation says the suspect in the killing of four people at a marijuana farm has been arrested in South Florida. The Bureau says Wu Chen was taken into custody this afternoon by Miami Beach Police. Investigators say three men and a woman, all Chinese citizens, were found dead this past weekend. One person survived. This is AP News.
Girls and boys in poverty around the world are dreaming of a better life, filled with dance, art, music, and knowledge. They dream of a brighter future with enough nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn and grow, to get an education, escape poverty, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, such dreams are coming true. Together, we give children a chance to set their sights high and succeed in school and in life by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and so much more so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today. Together, we can help end poverty for good.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
My husband said to give our house more curb appeal, so I started painting. Then I went on Google and looked up the meaning of curb appeal. It said to make it more nicer. So I called Replacement Window Center, and they put in new replacement windows.
Get free installation and 0% financing for 18 months. Free installation and 0% financing. Hurry, call now.
Replacement Window Center. Our name says it all.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Being a father is an honor, a challenge, a duty, a celebration, and a testimony. I want to be legendary for you because I found everything to live for.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council. What is dedication?
My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night, and every moment in between. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. Outagamie County deputies say a drunk driver set off a series of crashes that killed two people on Interstate 41 and sent nine others to the hospital Sunday afternoon. Investigators say a drunk driver rolled their car and had to be cut out by firefighters. That caused backup, which led to six other crashes and closed I-41 for several hours. All 72 counties in Wisconsin are done with their vote canvasses. The Elections Commission says statewide candidates have until Friday to ask for recounts. After that, the Elections Commission has until December 1st to certify election results. In sports, the Bucks beat Portland last night 119-111. Milwaukee hosts Chicago tomorrow night. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
Points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at therickSmithShow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the story has come out that the Smart Union, the Sheet Metal Workers, Air, Rail, and Transportation Workers Union, has voted down the tentative agreement that was made on the rails with the Biden administration and the rail companies. And you look at the reality. These rail companies, wow, I was looking at some of the profitability numbers. Wow. BNSF saw their net income jump by 16% to $5.9 billion in 2021. You've got Union Pacific, which had the most profitable year ever in fiscal year 2021. And you see that CSX saw a 37% jump in its 2021 revenue earnings, up to $3.8 billion. There's a lot of money here. You know what they're not doing? Not sharing it. And not just that, it's the conditions. And here to share some thoughts on how this is going, why it was voted down, and maybe where we go from here. I've asked Jared Cassidy to come talk with us. Jared is the Assistant National Legislative Director for the Smart Unions, the Sheet Metal, Air, Rail, and Transport Union. Jared, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So tell me, what's going on? What happened?
Well, so what you're seeing is a lot of frustration and a lot of anger from the membership. And really, it's the backlash from years of precision scheduled railroading by the railroads. I mean, that's ultimately what is driving the motivation for the members at this point. I mean, they're frustrated, they're angry, they're mad. They've been mistreated. They haven't had any dignity or respect from the railroads for years. And they're basically telling the world it's time for a change. And the best way they can do that is through the vote of an agreement. And you know, I've talked about it kind of candidly with a lot of folks, but if our ballot had a third box on it that basically said strike, and they could have chosen yes, no, or strike, I think the majority would have been at a strike position simply because precision scheduled railroading has taken such a toll. And you were talking about the gains that the railroads have made. You know, the irony of that is that the customers and the shippers have for the last 3 years been complaining to the STB about a lack of service. I mean, they can't even depend on the railroads to deliver their goods, and yet they're still making, they being the railroads, making record profits. I mean, it's unfathomable to think that a railroad or any corporation for that matter could actually do a worse job at servicing their customers and make record profits, yet that's where we find ourselves, and our members are right in the heart of that. And you're seeing that frustration and that anger play out.
Yeah, no, look, I spend a lot of time in the rail yards here in the Harrisburg area, and I'll tell you, you know, the trains aren't always on time. There's a lot of frustration with the people. And look, you know, the folks that I talk to there, the frustration is they can't keep people. And a big part of this is, you know, the hours that people have to work. The people who are there, they abuse and take advantage of. And some of them, the struggle is still the wages and the hours.
Yeah, I mean, it's... The hours are just insane, really, for a lot of the men and women that are out there working on the trains. and the conditions are right there with it. You know, I mean, our folks go to work and, you know, they're constantly being observed. And what I mean by that, excuse me, is they go out there and the railroad managers want to observe them doing their daily task and basically try to catch them doing something wrong. That's been around forever in the railroad mentality, but now they're flying drones over their head. And so our folks are out there working and they've got to deal with this constant buzzing of a drone flying over, watching every move they make while they're tired and fatigued because the railroad rang their phone all night long to see if they were qualified on territories that the railroad knew good and well that they weren't qualified, yet they kept them awake all night trying to see if they could trick somebody into taking a train. And so it's to explain it in a segment as short as this, it's almost impossible. But I mean, you know, what you hit on is spot on. It's there is so much going on right now in the railroad industry, and basically they have cut way too deep, and now they're tasking everybody else with trying to pick up the slack. And ironically, you know, when they made that cut, there was no room for slack in their operations. And so we have found ourselves where we are. And it's sad for the nation, really, because, you know, when you think about it, the lack of transportation that's occurring on the railroad industry right now can be argued by a lot of people that is quite possibly responsible for the supply chain crisis and even the inflation we're seeing.
Yeah, a lot of it. I absolutely agree. But this is where I get conspiratorial a little bit, because I'm looking at this and I'm looking at the amount of wealth being created by these railroads, the money they're putting in their pockets, they're paying their CEOs, the revenue that's coming in, that this could be operated so much differently. This could be operated with set schedules. You could hire more people. We've done it before. We've done it in the past. It was there before. It seems to me, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, that this is a created crisis to get to a place to where maybe, well, we just don't have enough manpower. We have to go down to a one-person crew on a train. Or maybe we just fully automate trains and we don't have people at all because, hey, we can't get people to come to work in these horrible, deplorable conditions with this precision scheduling railroading that we've jammed down their throats.
Yeah, so if you're a conspiracy theorist, you're not alone. There's a lot of people having that conversation right now. And it has been discussed and tossed around that somehow this is all self-created to show a need for people that they can't fill. And then lo and behold, what we got to do next is cut our way to where we can make more gains operationally. Because that's what this has all been about over the last 7 years, is cutting their way to profits. You know, longer trains, less people, anything they can do to cut and make more money. And ironically, they've been somewhat successful at, but now you're starting to see the realities of that. And is there a scenario where the railroads could actually contemplate, you know, cutting their way to the fact that they don't have enough people for, say, a conductor to be on the cab of the locomotive? I would tell you that keeps me up at night because, you know, it's not just the job loss that's really the threat here. It's the safety to the public that's most important. It's the data that the industry doesn't keep, that the conductor is responsible for, that is really at stake. And I would tell you that in America, we hit somebody, something every 3 hours on average. And the railroads like to compare us to Europe, but it's not comparable. They don't have the same infrastructure. They don't have the same amount of crossings. They don't have a lot of things that we don't have. Train length is different. But as a conductor, for me, there have been several times where I have blown the whistle because the engineer was busy doing their thing with the software programs and all the stuff they have to deal with. But if there's a child coming out and the engineer doesn't see it, so I blow the whistle and that child goes away, it seems so trivial. It seems so fundamental. But the reality of it is in that 3 to 5 seconds, that kid was on a path to a fatal injury, a fatal accident, and because of the actions of a conductor, just simply blowing a whistle, that child's life was saved. But the unfortunate piece of that is that story doesn't get collected. It never gets told. And if we pull the conductor off the cab of the locomotive, the only way we're going to find out really how important they are is those numbers will trickle up. Yeah. And it will result in the life of folks that, I mean, it's just, it's an unfathomable, it's a terrifying scenario for me to consider.
No, and it's amazing to me that you're talking about, as profitable as these companies are, they can't make these conditions better. So let me ask you flat out, is there a way to make the trains run on time, to give people the ability to have lives so they can have actual weekends off and not a day a month or whatever scheme they dreamt up? Is there a way that people can have decent lives and still have a decent job and our country to still have the infrastructure to move our goods around? Is there a scenario where that is at all possible?
Now, the answer for me is let labor have a seat at the table. This shouldn't be a corporate operated world. We should have input in the operations for the businesses that we make run. And when it comes to railroading, labor should have a seat at the table when we're looking at operational schemes, when we're looking at safety programs, when we're doing all these things. Labor is constantly cut out. And I think what these railroads and corporations in general will find is that labor needs the job. We need the job to take care of our families. We want to take ownership and an active role and what it is that we do. And if they would just allow us to even sit there and have some input, we could influence a realistic way to make things better for everybody. And I mean, it's, you know, we don't want to bring harm to the companies. We don't want to bring harm to anybody. We want to do our jobs. We want to service our customers. And it's just unfortunate that no one will really, that, For most, we're just a hurdle. We're an obstacle. We're that thing that they got to get past.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be that way. We should be allowed to take part. I mean, shorter trains, faster trains, it makes more sense. The frequency, the fluidity of the infrastructure, you know, that's just one very simple change that we can make as an engineer myself. It makes sense. It's easier to operate those trains and you can maintain track speed. When you run a train that's 5 miles long, which we're doing every day now on the BNSF up north, over 60,000 tons, over 26,000 feet daily. That train moves literally like a caterpillar. Why not break it up the way it was designed so that it stops off crossings, that it actually fits in sidings, it doesn't slow everything else, and it moves at track speed at 60, 70 mile an hour instead of 15, 17. I mean, it just... They're simple decisions that we should have a part in making or influencing. Yeah. That would improve things for the better.
Now, this is what happens when you get bean counters making decisions instead of actually people who have run the rails. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show with Jared Cassidy. Jared's the Assistant National Legislative Director of SMART, the Sheet Metal Air Rail Transport Union. You can check out their website, smart-union.org. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that stuff. So let me ask you the question of the day. Is there going to be a strike? Is this going to happen?
Holy cow. So that is the loaded question. And I don't have the answer for that. The president, meaning the president of the United States, President Biden, has been pretty clear that he is concerned about the threat of a strike. He has been out in publications and media. In fact, I was reading an article before I got on here that, you know, out of concern for the supply chain of America, which is understandable, it's on his mind. I can tell you that leadership in Congress is concerned. There are some things we have to work out. We are back at the table, so to speak, with the carriers. We're not too optimistic that anything actually is going to come out of that. I will tell you we're hopeful. I mean, we would love to have an agreement, a mutual agreement between the two sides, but it's not something that we can be terribly optimistic about. And so I don't know. That's the answer. I wish I could give you something more definitive. I know our folks are ready to go and we're ready to fight with them. They deserve better, and we want to make sure that they get better. And if it takes a strike, by God, we're going to be walking the street with them, and we have our boots strapped up and ready to go. We're going to do whatever it takes to get the job done. But at the end of the day, what Congress does, I wish I had that magic crystal ball, and I am the guy for the union, or one of the guys for the union that works on the Hill that tries to figure that out. And we do have a hill to climb at the moment. But we're going to do what we need to do for our membership.
Now, Secretary Walsh has said that Congress will, he believes that Congress will step in. And I would assume to get past the holidays, put another cooling off period in place. Do you see that as a possibility?
I hope not. I will not mince words here. I think a cooling off period would be horrible for our situation. Our membership would not accept that very well whatsoever. It would, in fact, I think that's probably the worst decision out of all this. Congress has a lot of options at play, but the extension of a cooling off period for me is kind of a non-starter. I don't see that scenario playing well for the members.
So are you talking possibly a wildcat strike, or are you looking at something else?
No, we wouldn't support a wildcat strike. It's illegal. The financial implications that would come upon the union for that would not be wise. So, you know, if they force an extension on us, Rick, I'm saying that we would not do anything illegal. We will be in accordance with the law. But if they do extend it, my point is I don't think the membership would be really happy with that.
Yeah, the reason I bring that up is you can't control what your members ultimately would do in the event that, look, there is anger out there. And I've talked to some of the people, and this is something that has come up, and that's the reason I ask. And I know the union's position, but ultimately it's the members, right?
It is the members. I mean, the members drive the union. They make all the decisions. Everything that we do and act on originates from them. But that being said, we also have the obligation as officers to protect the integrity of the union. And right. Acting outside the scope of law would obviously be a failure on our part if we were to do that. So
absolutely.
To do anything that's illegal, we can't condone or sponsor, if you will.
Right. No, I get it. Absolutely. So last line of questioning I've got for you then, what do we do? You know, what do our listeners do? What do I do? You know, what's the way forward? Because, you know, a cooling off period, as you've said, is something that you find unacceptable, which has been one of the only ways that we've been told is a possibility to avert this on the short term. What is a better path that you see, Jared?
We need public pressure, and not just pressure on Congress, but pressure on the railroads too. You know, we need to let the carriers know and Congress know alike that the public is on our side, and I believe that wholeheartedly. I mean, we're asking for stuff like sick time, we're asking for stuff like quality of life, the ability to be a husband, to be a father, to be a brother, whatever it may be. You know, we're not able to do that right now, and so we need to let the folks that are trying to pull the strings on us to know that the public is on our side here. We're not asking for too much. We're not even outside of our lane. We just want to be treated decently with dignity and respect. And that's what we're asking. And things like sick time, things like the ability to take a mental break if you need one. The railroad is actually very stressful. You know, we should be able to pause our lives for a minute, professionally speaking, if that's what we need for the safety of not just ourselves, but everyone else, that the communities that we intervene. And so that public pressure, that is what we need. We need folks contacting their members of Congress, their senators. And it wouldn't even bother me if folks are riding the railroads and saying, hey, I stand with the workers. You know, give these folks some time off. Yeah. Quit doing what you're doing. That's what we need.
No, 130 years ago, 135 years ago, workers fought, bled, and died for the right for 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what we will. And here we are in a moment where you've got guys who don't get 8 hours for what you will for an entire month.
That's exactly right. And the railroad unions were a big part of that. And, you know, here we are at one of those turning moments in our lives. And, you know, we got new generations coming in and new thoughts and new ideas and really stuff that they're not going to put up with. And so, you know, we need to make this career better, but we can do it in a way, especially with the kind of money we're talking about. I mean, they're turning billions of profit every quarter. There's no sense in cutting us and keep cutting us and keep cutting us. We actually matter to their bottom line. In fact, we drive their bottom line. I would dare say we are the ultimate reason for their bottom line. And if they want to see their company successful, then they need to invest in our folks and let us do our jobs, and the rest will take care of it.
So. Amen. Good stuff. The website, smart-union.org. You can go for more information there. Jared Cassidy, appreciate the time, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Rick.
Have a good holiday, and I wish you the best in this. You can, again, check out the website, smart-union.org. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find yours, you will find ours, from Stitcher to Podbean, iHeart, iTunes, all of that. Right back after this. We'll be right back.
fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I got to tell you, I look at the profits of these rail companies, and it's obscene. I mean, it really is. And this is where, you know, I forgot to ask Jared. You know, there's part of me that goes, at some point, doesn't the threat of nationalizing the railroads have to pop up? Because clearly they're not operating totally in the interests of we the people. They're operating in the interests of their shareholders. It's all about them. That's it. I mean, when you see that, you know, BNSF, their net income jumped 16% to $5.9 billion in 2021. In the first 9 months of fiscal year 2022, its parent company bought $27.1 billion in stock buybacks. Understand, it's BNSF is a subsidiary of Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway. So we're talking huge, enormous money here. They could afford to ensure that workers have a couple of days off. You know, and this is the thing. I don't think most people understand what the requirements to be one of these engineers is. These guys, they literally live to work. Once they get on that train, it takes them, you know, 10, 12 hours down the track. A van then picks them up, drives them to a hotel. And then, you know, they sit in a hotel and wait for that phone to ring. And then the phone's ringing all the time. Hey, can you go here? Can you go there? And look, there are only certain things that people are qualified for, because there are things you need to know. And these companies know what person's qualified for which runs and which things they can and can't do, but yet still pushing. Hey, you can do that. Hey, you can do that. Knowing that it's your license. It's your responsibility. And I go back to, I've had people complain about, well, the union isn't doing anything. You go, you think about how bad it is now. Imagine if there was no union. Imagine if you had not even this amount of say. And this is where, to me, we need to be strengthening unions across the board. To where in this situation, when my grandparents' generation was ruling the roost, there would be trucking companies lined up, warehouses. There would be people striking with them, boycotting. There would be people not going into the rail yards. They go, okay, you're going to treat people with dignity and respect. You're going to treat them decent, or we're going to shut you down. And what has our Republican friends do? What has our corporate control of government done? Well, we've legislated all that stuff away. And it's going to get worse. But I look at these operating ratios and the stock buybacks and all this stuff, and you go, you know what? A fraction, a mere fraction of that would make these people's lives better. A mere fraction of literally a crumb would make these people's lives livable, would bring in new people, new blood, to be able to take the next generation of jobs. And I truly believe, the more I'm seeing this, the more I'm reading about what's going on and how profitable these companies are, and the fact that they've been pushing the one-man crew for a long time, that this is a huge part in pushing that agenda to force Congress to go, oh, well, you don't have enough people to do the job? You can't get people to come and work in these conditions? Oh, well, then I guess we do have to go down to one-person crews. And then you're going to make that job so unbearable that, what, nobody will do it? Oh, I guess we have to automate. I guess we have to have the invisible driver there. And what's that going to mean? Well, it's going to mean chaos. It's going to mean people will die. But you know who doesn't care? The railroads.
WAUK 540 AM. Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio. Dana Perry.
What am I fearing? Why do I worry at all? 'Cause I can feel that.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote. Get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, at our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair with your headlines. The race for Secretary of State is finally concluded after incumbent Doug La Follette declared victory last Thursday, GOP candidate Amy Loudenbeck conceding on Monday. Loudenbeck waiting until the official county canvass concluded. Final results show La Follette winning by 0.30 percentage points within the 1-point margin where a recount could have been requested, but outside a quarter-point gap, meaning Loudenbeck would have been required to pay for it. Hundreds of Waukesha residents came together Monday evening on the first-year anniversary of the Waukesha parade attack. The memorial began at 4:39 p.m., the exact time now convicted Daryl Brooks drove through the route, killing six and injuring dozens more. Waukesha Mayor Sean Riley spoke to the crowd, as did Governor Evers. Waukesha's Christmas parade will be held December 4th with increased safety measures. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Atlantis says God has chosen him to rule because he's a fighter. But hello, he fights people rather than for them. He's a bully, and there's nothing godly about that. Nothing presidential either.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, interesting video on the Twitters came across my feed. This Nolan Rosenkrantz, he's a former president of the Toledo News Guild, now currently a staff rep with the News Guild CWA, ran across this guy, Alan Block, multimillionaire, rich guy, owns a bunch of newspapers. I think I actually own the Toledo Blade, if I'm not mistaken. But right now, Block and the Newspaper Guild, the News Guild folks, are in a strike situation in Pittsburgh. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette's been on strike for a while. Ran across him and this Block and his wife at a rest stop. And, well, oh, what an interesting bit of minute video. And I'm going to put that back out on social media so folks can take a look at it. The first part of it I can't play because too many expletives. But what's interesting is Mr. Block, you know, begins to answer a question about, hey, you know, why are you going through this, with the stock answer of, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. He turns around, sees who it is, and then an expletive-laden rant hits the guy with a bag and then marches off. Well, this reporter, Nolan, good on him, following along, asking simple questions. This one in particular caught my attention. Thought you should probably hear.
Why'd you cut off the health care of your workers?
Oh, we didn't. That's all a lie.
No, it's not a lie.
It's a lie.
It's not a lie.
You're lying.
I'm not lying at all.
You're lying.
You know, since Alan
you
has been
on
in
our
charge
plan.
Of the
you're
newspapers,
you know what? No one's. No
he
one.
Hasn't given a raise to employees at the Toledo Blade once.
Leave.
I did leave. I'm not at the papers anymore.
Good. So
but what about the people that are there?
They should get other jobs if they're not happy.
They should get other jobs if they're not happy. How about you just be ethical owners?
They should just
Why not
just
be ethical owners?
They should just get other jobs if they're not happy. And this again, is the right-wing frame. This is the billionaire flame. Not happy, go somewhere else. Instead of, well, fight and make things better. And here to talk about how they're fighting to make things better, I've asked Zach Tanner to come talk with us. Zach is the interactive designer over at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Currently on strike. Also the president of the Newspaper Guild of Pittsburgh. Zach, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rick.
So this little interaction that Mr. Rosenkranz and the multimillionaire Mr. Block had, very typical of the kind of dynamic that the employer class thinks of the servant class. Because for me, the dynamic right from the start is the reporter asks a question. And you start getting this stock answer until he turns and sees who it is, and then immediately sees that person as less than human, someone he can hit with his bag.
Yeah, right. And this is not like atypical for this family either. I mean, it was well publicized back in 2019 that Alan's twin brother John, the publisher of the Post Gazette, came into like the newsroom on a Saturday night and ranted and raved to his daughter in front of like a bunch of journalists that like they're the Blocks, they're high class, they're better than the workers that work for the paper. And like, that's how they view themselves. And I think that's like really why we're in this labor situation at the Post-Gazette, why we're on strike right now, because like these multi-generational multi-millionaires just have no respect for the workers who make their product. If it wasn't for the workers at the Post-Gazette and the Toledo Blade, Block Communication wouldn't exist. And they wouldn't have their millions of dollars that they inherited from their family. And now, as we sit here in 2022, they think it's okay to like literally smack reporters and smack union reps with like a bag of Wendy's at a rest stop. It's like completely absurd and insulting.
Yeah, but again, it's one of these things where you go, it is predictable. It is how they view their workers in many cases. And this idea of benevolent dictators, you know, it comes out right out to play. Well, you know, well, if you don't like it, you can leave. And you go, well, wait a second. If everyone is as bad as you are, where are you going to leave to? This is where I keep going. Every worker needs a union. Every worker needs a contract. Every worker needs to be able to fight back against bad bosses like this.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And like, that's why we're on strike, right? Because we're striking to like protect the workers at the papers, we're striking to protect the contract at the papers, and we're striking to make sure that like the Post-Gazette, despite like this family and the things that they do and the insults that they hurl toward their workers like day in and day out, is like a great community asset for like decades to come, right? Like, we want the Post-Gazette to be a great place for great journalists to come work. Seemingly John and Alan Block don't share that sentiment. So we want to, you know, get a fair contract, secure a contract that we can then build upon from that to make sure the Post-Gazette stays strong.
Yeah, I mean, I can't, maybe it's just me, but I'm watching this video and I'm watching it again right now. I can't get that interaction out of my head in going, you know, this is sadly where we are in this country, where you have these enormously wealthy people who feel that they have the power and influence and the ability to do whatever to whomever they choose without repercussion, without being answerable to anyone. And when someone does have the audacity, someone dares to question them, they lash out. I mean, this is, I guess, the sign of our times, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate, but I think it's true. And, you know, I think that this also comes from, like I mentioned, like they inherited every dime they have. They've never
made their money the old-fashioned way.
That's right, from
Daddy's trust fund.
Exactly. And I think that's like an inherent problem, right? Like they've never worked a day in their life. They don't know what it's like to, like, you know, have to sit around and wonder how you're going to pay for like Thanksgiving dinner, right? Like they've never thought about that. And that like really disconnects them from the workers who make the paper and who produce the product that makes them money. And I think like with that disconnect, like you're just going to have these, like you said, like rich elites, quote unquote, I don't know if I'd consider them elite or not, but they certainly consider themselves to be that way, treating workers this way. It's despicable.
So now when is the next bargaining session? I mean, at some point, this is going to have to go to resolution. At some point, he's going to have to sit across from the table from, well, you guys and, well, the guy he hit with the bag. At some point, you're going to have to answer for that. At some point, this is where accountability comes in and workers collectively organizing and bargaining coming together will hold some accountability. What are we expecting?
Yeah, so we had two bargaining sessions last week that we didn't make much progress at, frankly, and that's because the company didn't come with the intention of making much progress. We have another date on the books for Tuesday, December 6th. That'll be the next time we meet with the company. And we're hopeful that when we go to the table this time, they come with like some really like concrete offers and concrete proposals to end this strike, get a signed CBA, and get everybody back to work.
And I ask this question every time there's a strike situation. How much of this is truly financial, is truly the company's acting in its own best interest financially to try and keep the ship afloat or keep moving and how much of this is just pure, blatant, straight out union busting?
You know, if you want my opinion, as we sit here today, I think it is blatant union busting. At the table, whenever we've talked economics, the answer that they always say is like, it's not that we don't have the ability to pay, it's that we don't want to pay. And one of our demands when we went on strike to go back to work was to settle the non-economic issues that are outstanding in our contract and then bargain the economics later. Like, we came in really good faith. Like, here's like an easy solution to get us back to work and then bargain a CBA. We went to bargaining last week with some non-economic, like jurisdictional kind of things at the table to talk about. And the company just flat out rejected every single thing that we took to them. They were not interested in talking about these non-economic topics. So if they're not claiming an inability to pay, they're just saying that they don't want to. And they're not willing to bargain over non-economic issues like union security issues, union jurisdiction. Like, what's that tell you? That tells you that they are out to bust the union, and that means they are out to harm the workers at the paper.
So, you know, and looking at this, and there's part of me that goes, again, this is why we need major comprehensive labor law reform to hold these kind of people accountable. Because, you know, in looking at this, how much of this is Block himself, and how much of this are the lawyers that they hire to cash in on the billable hours, or is it both?
I think it's both. I mean, like, you know, the lawyers are hired hands. They're very evil hired hands that are anti-worker, right? But they're still hired hands. So like the dictation is coming from the blocks as they hire them. But these lawyers that they have employed are very good at racking up billable hours for sure. As an example, we had an NLRB hearing in front of an administrative law judge based on some bad faith bargaining complaints that we had moved forward by the National Labor Relations Board. And representing us was our one single labor attorney, Joe Pass, and representing the company over 5 days of hearing was four different attorneys. And I can't even imagine what these union busting attorneys charge per hour. In fact, I can probably make a guess based on some back of the napkin math that those four attorneys over 5 days cost more than the settlement and the strike would have cost. Whoa. You know, it's pure union busting. They want these attorneys to be charging these fees so that they can pay them rather than us. Yeah. Isn't that awful? Like, you're not, you can't create a newspaper with attorneys. You can create a newspaper with reporters and designers and copy editors and photographers. And that's what we're trying to make them understand.
Now, I was talking to somebody the other day about just about this strike and one of the issues being your health care. And I said, what's remarkable to me is they cut off your health care and said, hey, you could come on to our crummy plan that you don't want. But you were actually willing to pay the difference of the cost. So it wouldn't have cost them a dime more out of their pocket. What it would have cost them is the money that they would have made off of those plans that they don't want anybody to know about. But it wouldn't have cost them anything to just give their employees what their employees actually want and need for their families. This was a power play more than anything. So, of course, they kicked all their employees off their health care, say, well, if you won't take what we're giving you, we're not giving you anything. And it's that kind of, I don't know, it's that kind of mean and spiritedness. It's that kind of, you know, backdoor, you know, I just get angry.
Oh, trust me, we get angry too. I mean, this has been just typical of them at the bargaining table since the contracts expired back in 2017 for all the different unions. You know, like, we go to them with, like, productive ideas. Like, we go to them with a healthcare plan that says, like, all right, like, all of the unions will band together and we'll go on our own plan. And, like, all you have to do is just kind of pay the same amount that you're paying now and we'll be on a different plan. And their answer is no, because they want, like, a bigger pool of people in their insurance plan. Yep. That's worse and more expensive, like two times, three times more expensive for some people. And it is really just truly like a their way or the highway, like to use like an outdated cliche, like that's it. They want it their way and they want the absolute ability to dictate any changes or anything like that. It is just, I don't know.
My mind goes to the place where you go, okay, well, why is this an absolute? Is it that the company that you're getting your insurance from will give it to you free if you take us on? What's the benefit? What's the kickback to you? You know, what's the sweetener for you, Mr. Block? You're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Zach Tanner. Zach's an interactive designer at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, president of the Newspaper Guild of Pittsburgh. You can check out the website to how you can donate before this holiday season, CWA.org/PPG-donate. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that and help in this moment to help these families make it through the holiday season. Because look, it's starting to get colder. The holidays are coming up. This is a tough time, especially to be on strike. And I don't have to tell you, Zach, because you and your members are out there on the line. How is morale? How are things holding up in this moment?
You know, I think for the folks on strike, morale is actually like not too bad, all things considered. You know, like, we're energized. We're angry after the bargaining sessions last week that didn't go well, even though we came with like some really easy good faith solutions to end the strike. But, you know, that kind of amps everybody up. And like, yeah, it's almost the holidays. But like, you know what? Like, the Communication Workers of America, we all have like $100 grocery store gift cards from CWA to buy Thanksgiving dinner with. We have a strike relief fund that's pushing over $70,000. And if you go to, you mentioned the URL just a minute ago. And if you go to unionprogress.com, there's a donate button there. All that money goes like straight to the striking families. That's, again, almost over $70,000 now. It's funny, like, the workers on strike and all of like our labor colleagues across the country, like, we all have each other's backs here. We're like uplifting each other. And I've been at the Post-Gazette for 8 years now. In fact, one of those like awful bargaining dates last week happened on my 8-year anniversary of being hired at the newspaper and starting there. And in those 8 years, I never got any kind of like, oh, here's $100 for Thanksgiving or for the holidays to like go grocery shopping with. It took going on strike for like all of like the fellow laborers, all the fellow workers in this world to like pitch in and like give this support system to the workers. It's like been really empowering, frankly. It's been like really encouraging to know that like while the ownership and while like the elites couldn't care less about us, they don't even pay attention to us at the bargaining table, all of us workers have each other's backs, and like nobody's gonna fall while we're on strike. We're all holding each other up.
There you go. Let's talk a little bit about real quick about the Union Progress site, unionprogress.com. You guys have started a news site out of this, using your talents, you know, trying to get some good news out there. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so the unionprogress.com, the Pittsburgh Union Progress, that's our strike publication that we're publishing while the strike's going on. I kind of use the phrase, like, keep talking to the Post-Gazette reporters. It just happens to be our work's being published on a different website than normal, while the Post-Gazette apparently doesn't want our work. You know, and we're really starting to, like, expand our coverage, too. You know, this is a strike publication, so, like, one of its core missions is to report on the strike. But we're also just reporting on the beats that we've been reporting on for our whole careers. We have transportation reporting, you know, we have community reporting, you know, social journalism, all kinds of good stuff like that. And in fact, like, a big committee met today in person at a coffee shop in Pittsburgh and just kind of hammered out like some pie in the sky brainstorm ideas, some brainstorm ideas that like might not be able to kind of come to life within the bounds of like a legacy newspaper. But for a new strike publication that doesn't kind of have any like baggage alongside of it, that kind of like reimagining what kind of things we can write. So there's actually like some really exciting stuff going on at unionprogress.com. And like, I encourage everybody to check it out and follow us on Twitter and Instagram, where we're kind of posting our stories all the time.
Big fan. I hope folks will take a look at it. This is the kind of stuff, this is the kind of, you know, the kind of screw you that should come with every strike. Yeah, we'll just pick up our ball and we're going to go in a different direction. We're going to produce what we were producing without you, rich guy. We'll show you. I kind of like it. So I hope folks will take a look at unionprogress.com. Also, cwa.org/PPG-donate. I know that's a lot. Just go to therickSmithShow.com. We'll get some links out on social media and how you can take a look at those things and make a donation. Help the folks out. But Zach, I appreciate the time. I wish you guys the best. Good luck through the holidays, and I hope the best on December 6th.
Appreciate it, Rick. We'll keep you updated.
Good stuff. Appreciate the time. Going to take a quick break. Right back here. Again, cwa.org/PPG-. Go there, make a small donation, help out during the holidays. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1909. That was the day that a young garment worker by the name of Clara Lemlich made a speech that would have a resounding impact on the labor movement in New York City. Lemlich was at a union meeting where she sat listening to men discuss whether garment workers should call a general strike. Finally, she asked to speak. She said, "I have listened to all of the speakers, and I have no further patience for talk. I am a working girl, one of those striking against intolerable conditions. I am tired of listening to speakers who talk in generalities. What we are here for is to decide whether or not to strike. I make a motion that we go out in a general strike." The female shirtwaist makers were trapped in unskilled, poorly paying jobs. This workforce was more than 70% women, mainly Italian and Jewish immigrants. These bottom-tier workers worked for $3 to $4 per week. Semi-skilled operators earned between $7 and $12 per week. At the top of the hierarchy stood the highly skilled cutters and pattern makers, who in some cases could earn more than $20 a week. The day after Clara's inspiring speech, 15,000 shirtwaist workers walked out of their workplaces. Workers at 339 of the 352 shirtwaist manufacturing companies in New York City went out on strike. It grew and became known as the Uprising of the 20,000. It was the largest strike by women up until that moment in American history. Strikers faced opposition from manufacturers, the police, and the courts. The strike was not settled until February of the following year. Factory owners agreed to meet the workers' demands, including higher pay and shorter hours. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickSmithShow.com. Yes, the holidays are here. We will be taking a break for the next couple of days to celebrate Thanksgiving and the holiday with our families. I hope the best for everyone in this holiday season. And this is one of my favorite holidays, because I am always eternally grateful for the fortunes that I've been given, and the opportunities that I've had, and the little program and everyone who listens, always grateful for that. So this is kind of one of those thankful. I'm not that sentimental, weepy, but I am grateful. And this is one of those holiday seasons that makes you think about that. And fortunate to have the things that we have, and the people around us that we have. So I hope the best for everybody. You know, the same spiel every holiday, you know, full of friends and family and memories and all of that stuff. So best holiday to everyone. Again, we will be off through the holiday back on Monday. Looking forward to that. So always good to take a day, rejuvenate, recharge, re-energize, all of that stuff. So we're going to do that. Now, look, I look at what's going on there at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. This is, again, the rich guy deciding, you're going to get what I give you. And this is one of those moments. Seriously, this is one of those moments where working people have to look long and hard in the environment that we're in. Because you look at this Alan Block, and again, I hope people will take a look at the video and the response. It's the first couple of seconds for me that really is the most important. Because, you know, they meet at this rest stop, and a guy from behind, you know, asks a question. Hey, you know, why are you doing this? And out comes the stock answer that, you know, well, you know, you know, we're losing with this, and you know, whatever their corporate answer was, we're losing money, and you know, blah 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 blah. And then he turns and he sees that it's, you know, a former worker and a former employee, or someone that he thinks is an employee, and immediately his demeanor changes from that of, this is someone I have to take seriously. This is someone I have to, you know, give a stock answer, because to someone that I can literally turn around and smack like a child. And it's that interaction to me is one of those really important, true moments. You know, all the press releases and all the PR spin and all of the nonsense aside, that core moment, that gut reaction of him turning around and smacking, oh, blank you, and smacking him with the bag. It doesn't get much more honest than that. And that tells you what that employer thinks of his employees. That tells you the mentality. And understand, it's not just this one guy. This guy's a dirtbag. Yeah, absolutely. Is what it is. But that's all of this class that views themselves as the producers, as the intelligentsia, as the important ones. The Elon Musks, if you will, who see themselves as so much smarter because they've had stories written about how smart they are, and they paid for them. But you know, it's like anything, you know, you got a good PR firm, you're gonna look good. But this is one of these moments, and I'm standing with these workers, because the reality is, when they do better, everyone else does. And this the wife going on, well, if you don't like it, you can go find another job. You hear this frame a lot from the wealthy. And the reality is if all of the jobs are identically the same, if everyone's being treated as poorly as these workers have been, because you listen to some of the people in all of these places where this guy has places, has employees, they're kind of treated the exact same, poorly. And this is where, as I've always said, you organize, you stand up, you speak out, you fight back. And even if you're going to leave, and even if you're going to be a short timer, you leave something better behind. You create a positive environment. You make conditions better. That's the kind of the American ideal, isn't it? None of this cut and run nonsense, which is what they want you to be. Well, you don't like it, you just go somewhere else. No, if I don't like it, I'm going to stand right here and I'm going to fight to make it better. I don't like it, I'm going to stand here and I'm going to organize with all of my coworkers and we're going to make it better, which is what's going on. So for my friends in Pittsburgh, please, this holiday season, stand with the workers there at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Go down to the picket line, walk with them, bring them coffee, and help give them the energy to stick this out one day longer. December 6th, as he said, is their next bargaining session, which, again, for me, way too long down the road. They should be in bargaining every single day, because people's lives, people's families' lives are on the line here. But you know what? That's what the owners want. They want to starve them out. They want to make it look like, oh, we're trying, while simultaneously starving these people. Which is why we've got to help them out. And the hope is you go to cwa.org/ppg-donate and throw a couple bucks their way. Again, we're going to be off through the holiday season. I hope you and your family and friends the best of holiday seasons, best memories, all of that stuff, and good and healthy food as well. Try not to overindulge. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.